Hey teachers, this episode is sponsored by Spaces Digital Portfolios. Spaces makes student growth in your classroom come to life with their free visual portfolio tool. Teachers can create spaces for their entire classroom, student groups, or for individual students, all online and completely free. Celebrate student learning and give parents a window into your classroom. Try Spaces at www.spacesedu.com today.
Is this the teacher hotline?
Hello, everyone. I hope everyone's having a great summer so far. I'm your host, Ronald Hay, and welcome back to the Teacher Hotline, where we try to answer some of the most pressing questions for teachers in and outside of the classroom. Today, our caller comes from Laura, who is a parent in the Halton District School Board. Laura, how can we help you?
Hey, Ron. I'm a high school teacher, and I just told my school that I'll be going on maternity leave halfway through the school year. This is going to be my first child, so I feel like I'm going to try and figure things out as I go. I'd love to hear from a teacher who's been on mat leave and hear what housekeeping items I had to get sorted before going on leave. Also, I'd love to hear what their experience was like going back after being away from the classroom for an extended period of time. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Laura. Yes, the miracle of birth. What a wonderful thing that is. I have never given birth to a baby, but I know a few people that might have. So our first guest today is Ashley Frampton, an elementary school teacher from the Calgary Board of Education in Alberta. Originally from Nova Scotia, Ashley received her B.Ed. From Acadia University and M.Ed. In Instructional Leadership in Education from the University of Calgary. She is happily married to her husband, Dan, and they've raised three children, Tula, Eddie, and Mia. And during the pandemic, Ashley created an Instagram account to support parents who are forced into homeschooling. The account focuses on early learning and development with an emphasis on STEM education, provocations, and play-based learning, sensory play, nature and outdoor learning, early literacy, and mathematics. You can follow her at Teach Them Little on Instagram. My second guest is a really close friend of mine, Danielle Kindry. Danielle has been a teacher for 21 years and was the department head of science at Appleby College teaching biology. And after giving birth to a beautiful baby girl, Ellis, Danielle is now starting a new chapter in her life this September as the department head of science at Havergal College, an all-girls independent school in Toronto. Danielle received her Bachelor of Education from the University of Western and her M.Ed. From the University of Bath in the UK. Ladies, thank you so much for taking the time to hop on the show today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ron.
No problem. Ashley, how old are your kids right now?
I have Tula, who's 7, and I have Eddie, who will be 5 this month, and Mia, who is just 2.
Okay, so Mia's probably not in school. What grades are the other two children in right now?
Tula will be going into grade 3, and Eddie will be starting kindergarten, and Mia will be going to daycare.
Interesting. So about grade 2, grade 3, that's going to be, I'm imagining, is that the age group that you kind of teach right now?
It is. I'll be teaching grade 2. So everything I saw Tula do last year, I kind of get gathered some ideas for the classroom when I go back.
Yeah, I bet that's super exciting right now. Yeah. And Danielle, Ellis has got to be probably over a year now, right? Around what, 15 months?
Yeah, you got it. She's 15 months old. It's crazy.
15 months? Mm-hmm. Wow, time is just absolutely flying. I know I saw her back in September and I'm seeing all your Instagram photos and she is absolutely stunning.
Oh, thank you. It's hard to believe, actually. You feel like you're going to be in really hard stages forever and then you're not. It's very, very strange. Yeah, it's a very strange experience.
Ashley, I want to go back to you. Like, does teaching young children, do you feel like influence how you raise your kids because you've been around young kids your entire life, or vice versa? Like, does raising your own kids now change how you approach teaching young children in the classroom?
I think it definitely does. I think I went into this parenthood game with a lot of confidence because I have so much background in early childhood education. And I've basically spent from the time I was 12 and up until post-secondary education working with kids. And I quickly learned that that was not the case. I wasn't as prepared as I thought it was, as I thought I was. So that was a tricky kind of transition for me. I think as far as parenting now goes, I probably have higher expectations for what home looks like and learning at home that other parents may not have if they don't have that education background. It's sometimes a positive in the house. It's sometimes a negative. You know, I try and incorporate literacy activities and sensory learning at home and STEM play. Honestly, I'm at a point now where it's been 2 years of being home with the kids. And if Eddie sees another sensory bin, he's just going to, you know, run the other way. He's over it. So, it comes with its, you know, the good side and the bad side.
Now, Danielle, I know you primarily teach senior school students, but now having a child of your own, does that change your outlook of how you perform in front of your students? Or is Ellis kind of not old enough yet to kind of, I guess, change how you approach the classroom?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I think Ellis is still a little young for me to kind of equate it directly with high school kids. But one thing that being a parent has given me already, and it's given me many things, is a better understanding of parents. And being a department head and dealing with concerns from parents, you know, not all the time, but certainly as a department head that comes across your desk, I feel like I have a better understanding of where they're coming from, how much love they have for them. And I knew, like, you know, that parents love their children. But you don't know until you know, and the love you feel for a child is very, very different. So I feel like I have a much greater understanding of where the parents are coming from when perhaps they are quite emotional about their kids and their learning. So right. I think that's been good for me as an educator and as a leader to actually have a much broader perspective.
Right. So essentially, I'm hearing that you won't be flipping tables anymore at parent-teacher interviews, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, no, it just happened that one time.
Once. I thought it was 10 times, Danielle.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not going to talk about that. You know?
Oh, you're right. Sorry about that. We'll cut that out. Not. let's go straight into the Matley stuff. Some of the nitty-gritty things that perhaps moms out there might be thinking about. So let's talk about when you actually told the school and the principal. And I don't know if there's a difference between legally telling the school when you're going on mat leave versus when people just feel like, oh, maybe this is the time I should. So maybe let's start off with you, Ashley. When did you tell the school that you weren't going to be coming back to school next year?
Sure. So within the CBE, you have to give 1 month's written notice legally. So technically you could be 8 months pregnant and then let the board know that you have an intent to apply for maternity leave. Obviously it's not that easy because it's sometimes pretty easy to tell when a woman is pregnant. I remember one of my principals, she came in and said, when I went to tell her that I was pregnant, I was around 3 months. I waited 3 months, I'd say, to tell admin just to get to that kind of, there's that 12-week routine check that, you know, every mom just kind of, they look forward to that and knowing everything's okay. So that's when I told admin all 3 times. There was one principal who said, I walked in a few weeks ago and you were eating a sleeve of soda crackers and I just knew something was going on. So it's a month legally. So,
okay. A month legally. And that's Alberta. So Danielle, do you know if that's different in Ontario or did you not even look into kind of the legal aspect and just said, you know what, I'm going to tell the principal.
Yeah. I mean, typical me, I didn't really look into the legal aspect because I knew that I wasn't going to wait that long. I waited a little bit because I'm an older person. And
so I didn't know that 25 was so old, Danielle.
I know. Right? Well, 26 now. So I was a little bit nervous. You know, just in terms of the health of the pregnancy. So I waited, oh gosh, I want to say like 6 months, but then my students, I saw them kind of chatting in my AP biology class and then they were like, you ask her. No, you ask her. No, you ask her. And so they came out and asked me, and I was like, okay, well, I clearly can't hide this any longer. Right. And so then I told my students, and then obviously told my principal and colleague.
Well, that's actually going to be one of my questions, was when did you guys tell your students? Like, I would imagine like an AP biology, that's a perfect thing to talk about. Like, what a segue to talk about your units, right? I'm sure your students were pretty excited for you, right, Danielle?
Yeah, they were very excited, very, very excited. And then they were like, I knew it. And I told you, and it was very funny. And it was a very joyous thing to share. And then my grade nines, of course, no one wanted to ask me.
They're so too awkward, right?
Yeah, they were, you know, they're young. So, right. But it was fun. It was fun sharing it, and fun sharing it with colleagues too.
Ashley, what about you? Like, you're teaching really young kids. Like, do they know what's actually happening on, like with you? Or do they just think like, oh, you know, Miss Frampton is looking a little bit different lately?
It's been different all three times. The first time I was at a school where I had taught the kids for 2 years, and it was a small school. So I was close to the families, and we actually like went out into a field, and I had made this secret code kind of math activity for them. And they were so excited. It was like, I think that was a grade four class. They were so happy. But the following 2 years, I was with a little bit younger kids, and didn't really, you know, not that interested. I mean, you have the two or three mother hens in the class who, you know, like to rub your belly as it's growing. And then you have the little guys who like to mention that you're getting bigger every day. They remind you, you know, they have no shame. They'll say they'll tell you how it is. So that's kind of the funny part about working with little ones. Danielle, 6 months is super impressive. Did you have anybody in the school who knew you were pregnant at all as like a support network kind of thing?
Yes, that's a good question.
You did.
Yeah, I had like some close colleague friends that I told, that knew.
I think that's like really important. Every pregnancy, I had one person who I trusted and who knew probably at like 3 weeks, because that's when symptoms start kicking in and, you know, you're not quite yourself in the classroom. So
that's very true. I mean, when I told my good friend, he didn't believe me. So he's like, come on. You're joking. It was Corey, Ron.
Oh, was it Corey? Corey's on episode number 2, by the way, for all of you fans listening out there.
There you go. Yeah, he thought I was joking, but
that's so funny. I do want to talk about kind of the checklist per se of things that you need to do before you go on mat leave. And we'll kind of put aside the financial planning for a second, because we'll save that topic in a moment. But besides kind of the financial planning, Danielle and Ashley, was there any other, I guess, quote unquote, paperwork that need to get done before transitioning into mat leave? Maybe starting off with you, Danielle, if you can remember anything.
Yes, it's a very overwhelming thing. And luckily, you know, the HR department at Appleby kind of walked me through all of it. They were absolutely incredible. Because I was completely new to the process. So one thing for sure I remember is you basically have to let them know when you plan on stopping working. Like, that was kind of the number one, like, this is when I plan to go off. Say, you know, my due date with Ellis was April 2nd. So I was like, okay, March 30th. And then they actually submit something to Service Ontario, I believe, which is basically a record of employment. And then once they receive that, because that's what you need to actually apply for your maternity benefits. So that was the first thing I had to do, was when am I going off, and did I plan to take 12 months or 18 months? Because
you got to make that decision that upfront, very quickly.
And again, like, there may be people listening, they're like, no, I didn't have to. And things get very foggy in the midst of this, of having a kid.
Right.
So I may be forgetting that, but I remember. And the reason is because, long story short, not to get into the money stuff, but you're eligible for a certain amount of EI. And if you say, I want 18 months, that gets calculated over 18 months. If you take 12, it gets calculated over 12 months. Right. So you do have to state that fairly early. Okay. Yeah. And also whether you're taking the full year or whether you're going to split it with your partner who could take paternity benefits. So there are some things right off the bat that you have to decide on.
Right. Ashley, do you remember anything that you had to go through? I don't know if things are a little bit different in Alberta, but was there any paperwork or legal stuff that you had to go through with the school?
Well, it was probably a little bit different for me because I ended up on sick leave, which turned into extended disability for my last two pregnancies.
Oh, wow.
So there was the form for obviously intent to take maternity leave. And then within 48 to 72 hours of delivery, there's forms for an absence request. You have to do a birth announcement or the board needs to do a birth announcement. If you had a C-section, that needs to be reported to them because that affects how long they top you up for. Also, you have to do all that EI stuff and send that to the board as far as getting your top up. I had sick leave forms. I had family physician statements. I had medical statements. There were so many forms for every pregnancy. So it was not your typical situation, but I mean, lots of women do end up in a situation where they can't work for the entire pregnancy. So it's not uncommon.
So obviously, you know, being pregnant, I would imagine it's physically taxing. So with all this paperwork bogging you down, like, is it your partners kind of handling this stuff in the background, or are you kind of like, oh, I guess I gotta, you know, go to the DMV and fill this out now? Like, how did you handle it?
I literally remember the day after one of the kids was born, climbing into bed and nursing my new baby, and Dan sitting beside me with his computer and filling out all of these forms. Like, I don't know if Danielle, you have the same experience, but we have to have them done within a certain amount of time after delivery. So it is, I find that part of the leave very stressful. Like, it's just not what I'm sure there's reasons that's in place, probably good reasons, but it is stressful for new moms. It's something that you kind of have to mentally prepare for. Like, after I deliver a baby, I'm going home and then I have to spend, you know, a couple hours one day filling out all of these forms. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because that also happened. That also has to happen in Ontario as well. I forgot. I was just thinking of kind of like before I go on mat leave, but you're right. After I had Ellis, there were forms and they had to be filled out fairly quickly. Like a birth registration. I had to make sure Ellis was on my Sun Life, like my health care plan. There was quite a bit of paperwork, and it's. You know, I so many times I've thought, you know, if you don't have someone to help you, you know, it can be, I'm just not sure how you would do it on your own.
I can't imagine.
It's pretty hard. So, cause you're just healing and you're exhausted and all of the above. So yes, there was a lot of paperwork after, and it like sits there in the back of your mind, like, I got to do this. Meanwhile, you've just, you know, passed a human. Sorry, but it's like nuts.
Like the miracle of birth. You are right. We'll have to quote you on that one, actually, to pass a human through you. Let's talk about money for a second, because I know you and I, Danielle, we talked about this offline, just how challenging it is financially, how expensive it is to raise a child here in Canada. So I kind of want to just, I guess, one of the main reasons why I want to do this episode was almost to kind of give a heads up to expectant mothers, like, all right, this is going to cost some money here, right? So let's talk about money. What happens to your salary when you go on mat leave? Is it like a percentage of your salary? Is it, and I know you guys mentioned EI a bunch of times, is it through the government? How does that work? And how much do you get paid when you are on EI? So maybe let's start off with the Ontario, because I don't know if that's different from Alberta. What did you go through, Danielle?
It's actually pretty shocking when you discover how little you will be receiving every month. And now some employers top up. That wasn't the case where I was working. So basically, long story short, you apply for EI, employment insurance, and I received what they call the max, which is kind of funny because there's nothing max about it. So it's really quite bad. So I ended up bringing home $2,000 a month, which is, a very, very, very significant decrease in my net income. Very significant.
Wow.
So it's pretty crazy how little you actually make a month. And the frustrating thing is it's supposed to be like 2365. And then the government takes taxes off that, which I find bizarre.
Oh, yeah. Tax you?
Tax you. But what I don't get is you've already paid taxes on your employment income and paid into EI. And then in the far off chance that you use it, they tax you again. So, and that extra kind of $300 when you're only bringing home $2,000 is pretty significant. So I found it very stressful, you know, as a homeowner in Toronto, it was extremely stressful. So
I was going to say $2,000, like that's barely covering mortgage or, you know, rent in certain places in Toronto. Like that's nothing.
Yeah. I don't know, well, you know, how you eat or how you pay your utilities. So I don't know how somebody single would do it in Toronto, frankly.
I was gonna say, like a single mom living in Toronto, I don't know how you actually can have a kid unless you had like a bunch of savings or perhaps parents helping you out.
Exactly. Wow, I probably would have had to rent my house and move in with my parents if that was the case for me. So that's and that's over a year. So that's $2,000 for 12 months. If I had taken 18 months, that $24,000 would have been divided over 18. So it would have been $1,300 a month.
Oh my God.
So that's what happened here.
Ashley, does EI work the same way in Alberta or does that story sound similar?
I'm pretty sure that's federal. So I think it's 55% of your earnings up to a max of like $980 biweekly. So it's about the same, $2,000 a month.
Oh my God. And were you just as shocked when you kind of got your first?
Yeah, I really think I always assumed that maternity leave was full pay and that somebody gave you the money. Like I didn't realize that it was just literally EI. Yeah. The CBE does top up for a little bit, not for long. I got topped up for 8 weeks. So they topped up my salary for the first 8 weeks I was off. And then if you could claim disability after giving birth, so if you had a C-section, they'll top you up to 13 weeks.
Wow. That's great. That's great. That doesn't happen in Ontario.
It's 2 months of full pay. So better than nothing.
Clarify this terminology for me, because obviously I haven't looked into this. When you say top up, like I've heard that word being thrown around quite a bit from other women going into mat leave. What does that mean when you say
top up? So basically the CBE will pay the difference between your EI that you get and then what you would normally make for your salary. Yeah.
Oh, so if you, let's say you made X amount of dollars, they would just pay you the difference. Wow. And Danielle, you're saying that Ontario schools don't do that in general?
I mean, I don't know. I can only speak to the school that I was at. I don't, like, my sister works for the public board. I can't recall in Hamilton, and I can't recall. I think it was similar to what happened in Calgary. Like, I think she got a top up for a little bit, like a very short amount of time, but it wasn't a full year top up. And so I know there are certain companies where people get topped up completely through the maternity leave. I do think, and again, there may be people listening that know more than I do. I'm sure there are. I think it's becoming more unusual for like a full top up. I think that's very rare. So
interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, so there's salary, which we talked about. So we're talking about EI, roughly $2,000 a month. And you're saying that's the max. So I can't even imagine if you weren't getting the max. That's kind of sad to think about. But what about benefits then? Do the school board at your school, Ashley, do they still allow you to have things like dental and massages and all that stuff? Or is that kind of now axed?
So if I remember correctly, the first 6 months, which are considered maternity leave in Alberta, you continue to get your dental, health, drug benefits and all of that good stuff. The second 6 months are considered parental leave and everything stops then. If you want to continue life insurance, accidental death and dismemberment, and EDB, extended disability, you have to pay for that. And they highly recommend that you do, because if anything happens to you while you're on mat leave, you want to make sure that you're protected. So that is about $170 a month that you need to take off that EI you're getting right away. Yeah.
Oh my God. Jeez, are you kidding me?
I wish.
It just adds insult to injury, doesn't it? Yeah. And in Ontario, actually, it was a little different, but similar. Applebee covered benefits, dental, paramedical, all that for the full year. And what wasn't covered for me was critical illness and long-term disability, those two items. So again, they were like, well, you could take a chance and not pay it. But considering that I, you know, had a baby during a pandemic, I was like, I think I have critical illness. Probably a good call. So that was about $2,000 for the full mat leave. So you basically, they said, okay, well, we're going to take this sum of money off your last full paycheck. So you might as well get used to, you know, kind of making
$2,000. That's literally like your EI check right there.
Pretty much. Yeah. So benefits were good, but except for I had to pay for critical illness and long-term disability. So,
all right. Okay. So we talked about salary, we talked about benefits. Let's talk about pension. Were there any implications of going on mat leave with your pensions, and how does that work, Daniel? Maybe we'll start with the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan, because I know that's kind of its own beast. I don't know if you looked into that or not.
Oh, yes. You have to let the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan know when you're going on maternity leave. That's another thing I should have mentioned. So I phoned them and let them know. And then they also received some paperwork from the did they receive paperwork from the school? But I definitely called them. You definitely want to follow up with them, because when you're making such little money on EI, you aren't contributing to your pension. So for that time that I was on maternity leave, for that 12 months, I was not contributing to the pension. So what that means is that it will push back your retirement date unless you pay it back. So you have, in Ontario, you have 5 years to pay it back. So, you know, they said, okay, well, it's $15,000. You have 5 years to pay it back, and you can pay it back in increments of a couple hundred a month. You can do it however you like. You can go under the mattress and pull out the 15 grand you've got and pay it. But that it certainly does have implications for your retirement date unless you pay it back. So
do you have the option of not paying it back?
Absolutely. And that's fine. Like, if you don't pay it back in 5 years, then you don't pay it back in 5 years. It just means that your retirement date gets pushed back. That's all.
And did you ever look into like how far that would push back your retirement?
I think I did ask them actually when we had the conversation. Oh, and the other thing I want to mention too is they charge you interest.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean interest?
They charge you interest. So they say you owe $15,000 on that last year. They charge you, I think it was 1% interest. So you will end up paying more than you actually owe, which I also was a little bit gobsmacked about, frankly. And so I spoke to my sister who'd had to, and I spoke to other friends and colleagues in teaching and about what they did in terms of paying it back. And then I'm still kind of making a decision, but I'm not quite sure that it's worth it at this point for me. So, but it's a very personal thing. I mean, and some people, you know, if you can only pay back $6,000 or $5,000, you do that too, whatever you can pay back.
Now, Ashley, you guys are on a different type of retirement type of fund. I think I was looking on the internet. You guys call it, what was it? I'm pulling out my notes. What is it? The Alberta ATRF, the Alberta Teacher Retirement Fund. Was there any implications to your retirement, whether it's the date or the amount of money that you get with your three mat leaves?
Yeah, I'm in trouble with this one big time. We did not plan well for this. It's basically the same as what Danielle was saying. You don't accrue any pensionable service when you're on a leave of any kind, maternity included. And you can catch up when you come back if you want to by purchasing service, but we never did that. And I was in a situation where I was fortunate and could take a little bit of extra time with all three of the kids. So technically I've not worked 5.5 years, I guess. So I'm in trouble with the pension thing and I'm choosing not to look at it right now, but I would not recommend that. I mean, it is very personal, and I have friends who are like, of course we bought back our service. And then I have friends who are like, no, I haven't even looked at it. So it's just, you know, it's totally up to the individual.
Oh my goodness. I'm sorry for bringing up this nightmare topic then, Ashley. My apologies. We'll move on from pension.
Move on.
Yeah. It does make you feel kind of icky. It does. Like you're like, I really want to do this, but where do I find this money? It's not a great, I agree with you. Like I think about it and I've only been on one mat leave and that'll be it. And then I'm like, oh, I want to think about something else.
Just don't think about it.
All right.
Yeah. We're giving great advice.
The advice is don't think about it. Ladies and gentlemen, write that one down. Don't think about it. let's not think about it. Let's move on to another topic here. Let's talk about another expensive item. Let's talk about daycare and moving back and transitioning back into the classroom. I know that Danielle, you just moved back into the classroom recently. Ashley, it sounds like you've done it 3 times now. From what I've heard from my friends that do have kids, that if daycare is something that you want to pursue, number one, it takes a long time to get on a waiting list. And number two, it costs you an arm and a leg. So Ashley, start with you. Did you ever go through daycare? How did you handle your childcare after you went back to work?
It was really tricky for me. I used to work in daycare settings and I worked with lots of daycares through the accreditation process. And I was very pro daycare. But when we started looking into the price of daycare in Calgary, it was somewhere between $1,100 and $1,500 a month. And we knew we were going to have more than one child. So we decided, it was a super difficult decision for me to make, but we decided to go the day home route, which comes with lots of benefits, smaller group sizes, less chance of illness. You know, they're in a home, you get to know the caregiver really well. Also, I don't think we've paid more than $900 a month for a day home. So that just worked best for our family.
Oh my God, that is so expensive. Danielle, you recently came back to work. How did you handle your childcare?
So I went back April 2nd. My situation's a little different, like, because my partner's off Thursday, Friday. Those are his days off. And I have a very close friend who's a pediatric physiotherapist. And she said, oh, please let me take Ellis on Wednesdays. I was like, okay, that would be amazing. So we really just needed Monday, Tuesday. And again, my partner's mom just lives in about 20 minutes away. So she came to the house for Monday and Tuesday when I was back. So I went back early April. So that worked out really well. So we just covered the cost of her Uber. So it basically worked out to about $40 a day. So about 80 a week we were paying. Come September, Ellis is going to go to a home daycare as well. So I really would like her to be with other kids. It's about 10 meters from my front door, which is amazing. And she's going to go 2 days a week. Now the cost of daycare in Toronto is extortionate. So we will be paying $75 a day. So if you were paying that for 5 days a week, I think that would be $425 a week. Oh so God. You're looking at $2,200. Yeah, about
$2,200 a month.
Yeah. Yeah, just for one child. Just for one child. So if you think about it, if you have two children, it is. So I think that's like, you know, that's why some parents choose nanny shares, like they'll share a nanny, which some people in my neighborhood do, or unfortunately somebody stays home, you know, because it just feels like, you know, you're paying just for daycare. So luckily in my situation, Ellis only has to go 2 days a week. So Monday, Tuesday. So it'll be $600 a month for the 2 days. And Leon, with you, Ashley, like there's going to be four kids. She's going to be in a home. I'm really looking forward to it for her.
So. I hope Ellis doesn't like toys, because I think you're going to have a conversation with her and say, we're going to have to cut back on the budget on your toys, Ellis.
I know. It is crazy. I really don't know how people do it. And, you know, when I look at Quebec and they have subsidized daycare, I really think something really needs to change for a lot of families.
Let's wrap things up over here. Two more questions. Was there any other paperwork that need to be, I guess, logistical housekeeping items that you need to do when you came back to work, whether it's calling the pension plan or telling your office or filling out some paperwork. Ashley, was there anything that you had to do, or was it, did you just slide back into the classroom and it was that easy?
From what I remember, the board kind of took care of all of that for me. I just had to do the kind of typical beginning of year occupational health and safety, first aid, that kind of thing. So yeah, it was pretty easy to go back.
Okay. So going back was actually easier than leaving then, it sounds like.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Danielle, same experience with you?
Yeah, I would agree with Ashley. It was pretty simple. Like Christine from HR, wonderful, helpful individual. She basically told me everything I needed to know, but it was far simpler coming back than it was leaving, for sure.
Final question for both you guys then. For any new expectant moms planning to have either their first, second, or maybe even their 10th child, what type of advice would you have for mothers about to go on this new journey of bringing life onto this planet? Maybe let's start off with you, Danielle.
You make it sound so wonderful. It is in lots of ways. My advice, I probably would just say one thing, and that is make sure to all expectant mothers, don't leave before you leave. In terms of your job and your responsibilities, you are completely entitled to the job you had when you left. And make sure that you don't compromise that, because that's important. So if that makes sense, your employer is legally obligated to make sure that you have the same position you had when you left. So I would, that is my advice. Make sure that is still secured for you, and make sure that is. That's my advice.
Great piece of advice. Great piece of advice. Ashley, what about you? Any piece of advice?
Just to respond to Danielle really quick, that's actually not the case in Alberta, which is interesting to me. After the 6-month maternity leave, they have to, you have to return to a job that's similar to the one that you left, but not technically to the same building or classroom or grade. It's totally up to the principal. And I was actually surplused on a maternity leave this round. So wow, it worked out really well. I'm going to a school that I'm really excited about and working with a principal who I know and love, and that's going to be great. But it was interesting to me that the board's now allowed to surplus women on maternity leaves. I don't know if I agree with that, but it is a little bit different in my case too, because I extended my leave. So
okay,
it's a little bit different, but I think my word of advice would just to remember to be kind to yourself. I think when I think back about teaching pre-mom life, it was my passion. It was all I did. I could give everything to my classroom and my students and the school. And you lose a little bit of that when you have kids. There's, you have to find the balance and what works best for you, because your family is going to be your focus now. And I think keeping that love for teaching alive by, collaborating with other teachers or engaging in PD that interests you, or just doing things that remind you, why you teach and of what it was like before you were a mom. I think that's important.
Yeah. Well said. I second that.
Well said. What a great way to end the episode. Ladies, thank you so much for joining in today on to Teacher Hotline. We really appreciate the words of wisdom and the advice that you guys are giving to all expectant mothers out there. Hopefully we can do this again sometime. And Ashley, it was really, really nice to meet you virtually. And Danielle, we got to grab a drink sometime soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for having me. It was so nice to meet you guys.
And thank you so much for all of our listeners out there for tuning into today's episode. If you enjoyed today's content, feel free to follow us on Facebook and Instagram for more upcoming episodes. And of course, don't forget to follow and subscribe on Spotify, Apple, Google, and wherever else you get your podcast from. And of course, don't forget to leave a rating. I'll see you guys next week on Monday. Take care, guys.